dedicated with Nishmas Rachelaya Batshav Chaim Tzvi.
Rabbi Isaacson, I was a little bit away for the summer,
yes.
And I'm happy to be back reunited.
Great to have you.
Thank you. We were asked to do a special series. We're right now in a time of year, but right now it's very morose. I'm still sporting the 3-week beard. We're about to have Tisha B'Av.
Tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night is going to be Tisha B'Av, and we'll read Megillas Eicha. Eicha Yishva Badad. We read of the city of Jerusalem and sitting in solitude.
Loneliness.
And loneliness. And then following that, we actually have, in only a few days after that, we have Tu B'Av, 15th of Av, which the Mishnah already describes as a very happy day. It's a day where the ladies would go out and they would court men, and there would be shiduchim, matchmaking going on. And my in-laws, actually, in their generation, I think it's called, they always say it's Sadie Hawkins Day, and then they go, ha 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 ha. They think that's the funniest thing in the world. I don't know.
I'm not sure what you're talking about.
I don't know what that is, but I know that my father-in-law always makes a point of saying that it's similar to that, and then he thinks that it's the funniest thing he ever said, even though he says it every year. So anyways, we were asked to talk about dating and marriage.
I'll just point out, since you mentioned the juxtaposition of Tisha B'Av and Tu B'Av.
Yes.
So, of course, Tisha B'Av, one of the reasons for the Churban HaBayis is Sinas Chinam, is that the Jewish people did not respect each other in the proper way. Baseless hatred, as is normally translated, and on the heels of that, perhaps this period afterwards, we're supposed to be attacking ourselves during the 3 weeks, the 9 days, and then certainly afterwards, and perhaps the highest level of Nagu Abbas Chinam, and a sense of the opposite of Sinas Chinam is a properly proper married couple that is really together on all levels. So perhaps that juxtaposition of Tu B'Av, Tu Tisha B'Av, is ultimately the tikkun for the Churban HaBayis that we're suffering through.
That's true. I hear that. It's a very powerful message of loving all of Jews, but charity, as you say, and love begins at home, right?
Yes.
And that's, you know, for somebody to be running around but spreading the wealth but neglecting their own home is something that we frown upon. Now, that having been said, I don't know, I'm not speaking for you, but I probably am the least qualified person, not only in the Nala staff, if they consider me a member of the staff, to speak about dating and marriage, but maybe, you know, one of the least qualified people in the world. After all, I only dated one person, thankfully, and that was a tremendous gift. And that woman who I eventually married takes care of all my needs. So in terms of marriage, you know, as a matter of fact, I've been forced by circumstance to be separated for a short amount of time,
mm-hmm.
and I'm completely without any instrument.
The kids do look a little.
Yeah, one of my children reminded me that he hasn't been fed for 3 days. He asked, what do you eat? We went to the grocery store, and I looked around and said, I don't know what any of this stuff is, and I wouldn't even know what to do with it. We just went home.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps in that sense, I'm unqualified to speak about these issues. People don't come and ask me questions about these issues. I am not well read in these matters, but I tried to prepare. I listened last year. They asked Representative Tzipora Heller to speak about this issue. I listened to what she had to say. And this year, and also Rabbi Chanoch Peller, who was actually renowned also for his matchmaking, amongst his storytelling and other things. I also consulted this book, Talking Topless, by Rosie Einhorn and Sherry Zimmerman. You're talking about family law and also artists.
Mm-hmm.
So these are angles which will help us with the dating. I also spoke to another very renowned speaker on the Nahle.com staff, Rabbi Reinish Ginsburg,
mm-hmm.
who has a lot of books, who has a lot of tapes of his own on this matter. He actually shared with me his thoughts and his underlining in this book. So with that, hopefully we'll be able to touch on some universal concept. Why the family unit? Why get married altogether? What is the Jewish approach to marriage, if you can answer me?
Sure, I'll give it a shot. Before I answer you, I don't want to be, if I forget to answer you.
Okay.
I just want to echo the point that I've been involved in chinuch and teaching really pre-college students, but certainly have a keshet with them as they go forward. And there's a lot of counseling that gets involved. There's a lot of men and women who are struggling through this issue, certainly to have rabbanim that they can turn to, teachers that they can turn to, and certainly all the help in terms of chizuk and really helping, as you mentioned, helping the network, helping them find the right avenues to find the right kind of people is very, very chashuv, cannot be underemphasized. overemphasized. And then the concept of, we all know, we read a lot about the Shidduch crisis, and certainly every person, you know, thinking and planning can certainly contribute and help the many singles that are out there.
You know what?
Yes.
I just remembered, Rebbetzin David was lamenting that there are people who are in a position to help that say, oh, I'm not good at matchmaking.
Right.
And I didn't want to forget to say this. There's no such thing as not being good at matchmaking. There's no such thing as being good at matchmaking as far as I know. How do I know? Because you look at matches and you see one is short, one is tall. You see what you would think were mismatches. One is sharp, one is dull. You know, one is outgoing, one is a hermit, introverted. And these matches seem to work.
Right.
So it's not that you put any two people together, but this is such a great mitzvah that if anybody could be in a position to put forth effort, then perhaps they should. And with that, I'll give you the floor.
Okay. First, I just want to make another introductory comment, and that is it's a little bit hard talking about this topic when we don't exactly know who our audience is. Whether we're audiences from the more modern Orthodox world, from the more yeshivish world, we don't really know who is listening. And what we'll try and do, and I'll just highlight a point based on the Chumash, we'll try and discuss, as we said, universal concepts that really span any world within the Orthodox community that that one comes from. Just it's interesting, when you know it, then you look at the others. So in the beginning of Sefer Bereishis, we're told of the Shiduchim, if you will, of two of the three others. When we introduce the Avram and Sarah, and they already seem to be together. However, when it comes to Yitzhak and when it comes to Yaakov, so we introduced a little bit to their, if you will, Shidduch process.
Okay.
And when it comes to Yaakov Avinu, we read in Parshas Vayetze that, again, it's well known the story, but again, Pshuto Shel Mikra, and obviously we're talking about Avos, and it's a totally different plane, right. But in terms of the Pshuto Shel Mikra, we're told that there's Rachel trying to lift a heavy boulder off of the Be'er. Yaakov, the gallant Yaakov, comes and flips it off of the Be'er, is somewhat stricken by Rachel, and seeks to marry her. Lavan demands some payment for that process, years of work, and the Chumash describes to us
a tale of love and devotion.
In a certain sense, indeed. And the Chumash describes to us that Vayehav Yaakov es Rachel, Vayomer Evdecha Sheva Shanim Baracha Bitcha Haktana. He's willing to work 7 years in order to go ahead and have her hand in marriage. Vayavo Yaakov Barachel Sheva Shanim. He works with for 7 years, and it's like days, it passes like days in his anticipation, in his love of Rachel. So Yaakov seems to be a
romantic,
in a certain sense. Again, it's about Avos, Rumo Shel Olam. However, that's one depiction of the story of Yaakov and Rachel. And then you have another depiction of Yitzhak Avinu. And Yitzhak, we are told that Eliezer is sent to find a shidduch for Yitzhak. He has certain simanim. And Yitzhak's not involved in that process whatsoever. He's totally divorced from that process. And finally, when they meet, and Rivka comes and falls off the gamal. But it's a very, Yitzhak seems to be somewhat aloof. And if we could go ahead and just paradigm out, so you have two different models of, if you will, shidduchim. One we'll call, maybe the most extreme, is the kind of Hasidish model,
right,
where it's a total shidduch process. The couple, the young couple, is not really involved much at all. So the family's involved setting it all up. And then, yes, there'll be a perfunctory day or two just to make sure everything is on the up and up. Perhaps we'll call that the Yitzchak model.
Okay.
And then you have a model which is less of a setup, if you will, less of a shidduch. And that might be called, again, the Yaakov model. And then, obviously, everything in between. Everything in between. We know that that in different circles it's more shidduch oriented. In other circles is more of a more natural kind of process. But again, our agenda here is really talking about the universal concepts that permeate all processes of dating. It's hard to say. There are benefits and detriments of each, no doubt. And perhaps we can address that a little bit. My talmidim often ask me, what's the purpose of a shidduch process? Why is it more natural to go to some kind of event, some kind of kira program, and naturally you'll go ahead and find someone? What's the logic of the shidduch process? I will just so we'll get back to your question, and we'll kind of talk these things out.
Right.
But in terms of what our goal is, so obviously it's been discussed a lot, but the goal in marriage, it seems to me, is marriage really represents a complete sense of partnership where you're literally sharing life together. And obviously love is a big piece of it, but it's a piece of it. And it really represents a whole partnership where you're building a family together, you're building a life together, and two individuals are really coming together to achieve a real sense of shleimus themselves, and then by again producing the next door, transmitting Torah to the next generation, to go ahead and really create that sense of shleimus, and ultimately the unit that that everything is built upon is the unit of the family, and that obviously starts when that couple comes together in marriage and then has that capacity, the whole unit that that we operate in, whether it's in our schools and in our communities, everything operates around that family unit, the unit of family, and that's really all starts with the man and the woman coming together, and that's how we begin the family, that's how you really achieve that sense of shleimus, that the ultimate goal, to go ahead and the individual couple becomes shalom by finding each other, and then together building that next unit that will live on that legacy to the next generation.
I hear that. I want to ask you a really difficult question. I honestly don't even know if you'll be able to answer it.
Okay.
And I don't even know if I'll be able to articulate it. But I think it's a burning question that relates to this issue. Do you think that the Jewish view, so to speak, the Torah view of the marriage, you mentioned building a family. Rebbetzin Tzipora also mentioned last year that when you're looking for somebody, you're looking for somebody you can build with. That's the word, building.
Mm-hmm.
Is so much focused on the children, and these parents are creating the next generation and passing the Torah, and they have to get along? Or is there a distinct sort of building process in the marital unit that sort of goes above and beyond just having the family?
So it's interesting. You might even argue, and I wasn't going to, but you remind me as you're asking the question of a, you look at Adam and Chava, and when you study the Sheva Brachos that we recite at a wedding, and you study the core marriage, if you will, so a lot can be derived from the marriage, if you will, of the first man and the first woman, Adam and Chava, and here you find that what the Torah tells us, that Al Ken Yazov Ish, as a Vivesimo V'davak B'Ishto, man to cleave to his wife, V'hoyu L'Basarecha, and they come as one. And there is Machlokes Hamafarshim, Rashi, Ramban, what exactly means V'hoyu L'Basarecha? One shot is that they come together as one, that these two individuals, really half parts,
two halves of a whole,
two halves come together, and they themselves achieve Basarecha, both physically and they become a unit in that sense, a total sense of achdus, the shleimus, that my missing piece combines. It's like two pieces of a puzzle. You put it together, now you see the whole picture. And that is even a divorce from children, nothing to do, pardon the pun, unintended pun. That children, forget about children, that's the concept that the husband and wife are together as one. And then you have the other idea is that a person brings that Bahila Basarecha, the capacity now that these two people, these individuals, have the capacity to produce a child and have another individual now, and their unity, their actus, is reflected in the offspring. So I would say both are correct. Right. Both are definitely correct. Certainly a couple, Rahman al-Islam, cannot have children. They certainly can achieve a shleimus with each other and really achieve the goals of family in that fashion. Obviously, it's a tragic situation, but certainly as well to achieve that sense of family, that unit of family within the context of raising a family and transmitting the Torah and our Messiah and our legacy to that next generation.
You know, dating is a hard process for people who, for whatever reason, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has decided that it's going to be a longer journey for them.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever they pick up along the way from that journey, it could be a difficult process.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine even once, one time being turned down, twice being turned down, three, four, five times. It reminds me of, after all, based on what you're saying, everyone wants to achieve a unit with somebody. So that, you know, there's no question that when you're in that face-to-face mm-hmm. dating situation, that person is evaluating you as a person.
Yep.
It's a difficult process on a certain level. You know, they see how you act, they see how you look, they see how you eat, how you behave, and they say, nah, I don't think so. You know, but, you know, it can be hard time after time. It's not just because, you know, it's not just like being rejected from a school or being rejected from a team. It's literally like a rejection of you as a person. A lot of people can feel that way. I can see how that might be a difficult process for people and can cause them to be discouraged.
Yeah, as you again raise this issue, I'm thinking back to emails that I've received from Talmidim, who, again, it's hard. It's definitely hard and painful, sometimes painful emails to read that boys who've gone out with hundreds of girls, 150 girls, 180 girls, and And certainly it takes a toll. Certainly it takes a toll. You wonder, you see your chevra, everyone getting married, and you're wondering, what about me? What's going to happen with me? I have a Talmud who, Baruch Hashem, is getting married in a very, very short time, a couple of weeks. And it took some time. It really took some time. I think he got into some triple figures. But he tells me, finally he found the shidduch, Baruch Hashem, and he tells me it was worth the wait. It was worth the wait. Like, it took some time. It was definitely a lot of ups and downs, a lot of downs in that process. But ultimately, Ribbono Shel Olam has his plan, and usually things do work out in the end. Almost always they work out in the end. And hearing that from this young man, that it's worth the wait, was such a tremendous chiddush to me.
You counsel mostly guys.
Mostly.
Okay. This is like people want to know. Mm-hmm. I don't know how instructive it is, but I'm curious. I realize it's speculation, but how many times, let's say the guys that get into triple digit dates, this is a hard question, how many times do you think it's because they're sincerely looking for the right person, and Hashem, so to speak, did not present that person to them yet? And what percentage of the time do you feel they would have been well served and maybe found somebody if they had a different mindset or a different skill set in the dating?
Super question. And obviously, you cannot give a general answer. Every case is very, very specific.
Right.
I do want to share with you another thought. That's Adam Arishon. And I think it's very, very striking. And again, we'll try and address your question.
Okay.
But we're told in the Chumash, in Perek Beis of Sefer Bereishis, Vayitzav Hashem Elokim. Sorry. The pasuk tells us, Vayomer Hashem Elokim lo tov hayos adam levado. It's not good for man to be alone. E'eselo ezer kenegdo. We need to make for him an ezer. And one would expect the very next pasuk ought to be that
creates
chapa. That's what one would expect. What's the next pasuk?
He makes animals.
Yeah, Vayitzar Hashem Elokim min ha'adamah koch yad ha'sadeh v'eskol of ha'shamayim v'yovei el adam l'ros ma'i krolo. Hashem creates the animals, and he brings them to Adam Rishon to see what he's going to name them. V'chol ha'shei kwalo ha'adam, nefesh chaya v'shmo, he gives them the name, he names all the animals, and then we're told that lo matzo ezer kenegdo, he doesn't find his helpmate, but yapel Hashem Elokim tardem al adam, he puts him to sleep, takes one of his ribs, and the rest is his
right.
But the question is obvious, why are we interrupting? He said you need an ezer kenegdo, and then said, let's create the animals and let's see what he names them. What exactly is going on over here? So l'chora, the pshat is that Hashem needed Adam Harishon to perceive a certain sense of loneliness. To go ahead and name all the animals, be with all the animals, and see that every single animal had its mate, had its partner in life. And Adam says, hey, I'm missing something. There's something lacking in me. And only when he perceived that sense of lacking, that sense that he was missing something, that sense of loneliness, that he was yachid ba'olam and he didn't have his pair, he didn't have his mate, he didn't have his match, only then was it appropriate to go ahead and make from chava. A person is only going to be ready to start that process when he has a sense of loneliness, of aloneness, that I'm by myself and I need to connect to someone, I need to build with someone. So that's, I think, critical thing that we learned from Adam Rishon. That's exactly why you have this break in the action. Let's introduce the animals, let Adam perceive and understand in a deep, deep way his loneliness and his aloneness, and now he'll appreciate Chava, he'll appreciate his wife, he'll appreciate what he has. He does have his partner as well, but he has to have that stage first. So when you ask me the question, so number one is certainly people who it takes longer obviously have that sense, that other Harishon sense of need, of longing, of a loneliness. On the other hand, as we all know, and we all experience this on some level, is as you get older in life, you become more entrenched in your ways.
Right, you become a caricature of yourself.
You become a character of yourself, and it's hard to change.
Yeah.
It's hard to change. You become more and more entrenched. And perhaps that's one of the challenges that as we all get older, as we do tshuva every Yom Kippur, it becomes harder to change. We're already set in our ways. We have a certain way of doing things. And for older individuals, it certainly is important to constantly have that sense of really identifying what's important and really having that ability to not become entrenched, to be to see what's really important, to not focus too much on shtiyot, and to have that sense of the bigger picture. I think that's a challenge that older singles might have. Right. Younger singles have a different challenge, and it's just as real. And that is, many times a younger single doesn't have a sense of who he is, doesn't have a sense of who she is. They don't have a sense of self. And in order to properly go ahead and date and really get a sense of another, you have to have a sense of self, of who you are, what your needs are. And a lot of times a youngster can't articulate, doesn't know his or her needs. And if he doesn't understand himself well enough to know what his needs are, then how can he start tapping into, A, what's good for me in terms of a relationship, and certainly tap into the needs of someone else? That's very difficult. So you have to really find that line of, A, when to start dating.
Right.
You have to have no sense. I have a lot of students who come from the more modern world, and a lot of them are heavily involved in co-ed activities through high school. They're involved. They have girlfriends. And I always tell them, it doesn't make any sense. I would say this even to secular people, to Gentiles, I would say this. Mm-hmm. How can you go ahead and start really, really tapping in a serious, mature way to someone else when you don't have a sense of who you are? You're a moving target. We have these boys coming into yeshiva as 18, 19-year-old boys, and they're getting into learning, and they're getting into Yiddishkeit, and they're very much a moving target. We don't know how exactly they're going to turn out after this process, and they're going to be locked into these relationships when they don't have a sense of what they are yet. And certainly that's a very critical thing, to have a sense of self before you can go ahead and proceed to have a sense of other.
You know, I just going to relate it back to myself for a minute. A lot of the things that you just said hit home. First of all, I lost my father at a young age. I feel I've always speculated may have been a contributing factor to me getting married at a young age, because I did feel probably, if not consciously, subconsciously, a feeling of readiness to move on, a certain readiness to share life, mm-hmm. something of that nature.
Perhaps that created some greater maturity in you.
You know, it's funny you should mention that, because some could argue that it didn't. And maybe my maturity became frozen at that point. You know, the reality is that that's what my rabbi was saying, you know, and I think that this is an important side point, that everybody really should have somebody that they trust with a great degree of experience, that they can bounce these ideas off from. Because like you said, you can't really open a book or, you know, listen to an MP3 or watch Nala and get the answers for yourself, right? It's, these things are so subjective to each individual situation. But in my particular situation, I'm still moving targets in many ways. And so I say, if you're a moving target, just aim high. Because if you aim high, then at least, you know, again, this is not a blanket statement.
Or find someone who's moving on a similar trajectory that you're on.
Right. I remember Cindy Parr-Heller had a great point. She said, sometimes when people make matches, they'll find a guy who's coming on the way up, and they'll match him with somebody who came, let's say, from a big background coming on the way down, and they'll base it on the level where they are now. And I've seen that turn into bad things, because it's more the mindset. You know, my rabbi at the time told me, I said, I have no prospect of employment. I am completely immature. I don't even know what I'm doing. And he said, listen, to me specifically, he said, this is you. You're not going anywhere. This is the way you are. This woman will tell you what to do. She'll tell you where to go. She'll take care of it. And the guy's a genius.
I saw that list you got. You're here at home without your wife right now.
I have been separated from my wife in 15 years. I've been separated like 2 days. And now, by circumstance, I've had to be like 3-4 days. I'm completely disoriented. And so to keep me oriented, I get long lists. You saw that? I get emails, long lists of what to do, and then I email her progress reports. It's like I can't put one foot in front of the other. This could be because of the fact that, you know, we got married very young, mm-hmm. and really literally grew together, so like we're fused together.
When should I start dating?
Good question.
Obviously, there's no rule of thumb.
Right.
And we all know that whatever is causing this, people are getting married earlier and earlier and earlier. They're dating earlier, they're getting married earlier. There seems to be this downward pressure. We seem to be creeping closer and closer to Ben Shmona Sreel Chuba.
I want to say especially for girls.
Especially for girls?
These are girls that are 25 in circles that were previously considered not the, you know, Hasidic model, mm-hmm. are like out of the ballpark.
Right.
Like a guy who's a good guy, who's 23 in yeshiva, first starting to really look around, they're already out of his radar.
Right.
With girls, the pressure is much earlier.
I will say, when I got married some 21 years ago, I got married a month before my 23rd birthday, and I was the first of my friends. Like, that was early.
Right.
Today, you know, 22, 23 is, I wouldn't call it late, but it's very much in the
you're saying even for guys?
Enormous.
Sure. So if that's the case for guys, you can only imagine it knocks it down to, like, teenhood for girls.
Right, right.
As
right.
is the case with your daughter, if I may say.
Yeah, I guess. And so when I get asked, you know, what's a good time to start dating? So obviously there's no rule of thumb for every single person, but what we echoed already is, number one, I don't think a person should start too early, and certainly he shouldn't start too late, he or she. A person definitely has to have a sense of self. And we all know that economic pressures in the life are also obviously very much on people's mind in terms of parents and how you're going to support yourself and things of that nature. But what I advise my students do go on to college, they're in college, is they should be thinking seriously about starting to date within the junior year of college to my boys. I think is a good time to start thinking about it. You have already that sense of vision, perhaps, of what you want to do professionally, of who you are as a person. You have a couple of years of serious yeshiva under your belt. You have a sense of who you are at that point. Now, again, a person might be more maturing, will start earlier. But as a general rule, that's kind of the approach I take. And the one thing I emphasize is that a lot of times, and I see this in my friends as well, those that got married later on, whether they started early or not, but they got married later on, a lot of times when a person pushes it off, so he graduates college, he finds himself in graduate school or in career already, he's living single, and the more one is not grounded in marriage, he's a free agent, so even his religious base, his whole base is not locked in. When you get married, you, in a certain sense, lock in where you're holding at that point religiously. You're now starting, you lock it in. And a lot of times I've seen boys who are very, very stuck, serious about their learning. They're in yeshiva, in college, doing it all, accomplishing everything, still not married. Then they start hitting the work scene, and all of a sudden they get involved in this aspect of work and that aspect of work, in the single scene and everything else. And all of a sudden their commitment to learning, and their commitment to the meticulousness of Shemir Samitzel starts to waver. And had they gotten married, had they locked in, you know, where they were in terms of their being a Ben Torah, a bit earlier, they would have started life in a different place and would have been much more grounded religiously. In my mind, there's no coincidence whatsoever that those of my friends who tended to marry later on in life, as a general rule, they were more challenged in these areas of being grounded in that firm type.
I'm hearing what you're saying very clearly, and I think it really answers my initial question loud and clear, which is, what's the point of Ezer Kenegdo? What is the point of marriage? And there's some very much something to that, that it speaks to the critical nature of supporting one another in this way, in building together, because, like you said, watching in the absence of that, what can happen, left to your own devices, a guy especially,
yep,
tends to stray. I don't know if that's the case for girls. I've noticed girls involve themselves in a lot of very productive things to try to continue to make. That's what makes girls great. In other words, the girls that the women that we see in the community, you know, with the chesed and the things that they do and the productive things that they do, you know, my wife pushes me to do it within the four corners, the four walls of our home. It's the Ezer Kenegdo factor is something that if you open your eyes, you can see on a daily basis. So right. I think it's very critical for the guys, especially.
Right, right. Okay, there's more to talk about.
Yes.
And I just need to take a little pause right now. We'll continue with this year in a moment.
Right, you have a class to teach.
Yeah, but we'll come back and we'll continue in a moment.